everyone, welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay, and first of all, as you can clearly tell, we have a new intro to the podcast, made yet again by my friend Derek at Cracked Prism Studios. So I'll leave his info down in the description. He's just an awesome person, so that is exciting news. We have a brand new intro, and what an episode to debut a new intro with than this one, where I talk about a band that honestly I haven't given a lot of my time and attention to. Most people would probably consider Blind Melon to be a one-hit wonder type of band from the 90s. They have their massively popular song called No Rain, and you might remember the music video specifically with the B-girl. That is extremely popular and very iconic. So that's the song there. But I really wanted to dive deep because I remembered that lead singer Shannon Hoon of Blind Melon had passed away very tragically while on tour with the band. And I wanted to see more about who Shannon was and see if I could kind of get into his mind a little bit and kind of try to understand where he had come from and what he was dealing with and battling with, what he was going through, the highs and lows and the ups and downs of Blind Melon, because there's some very fascinating music links that Blind Melon had that I wasn't even aware about. It's kind of interesting, very, very, very much so interesting. So I'm literally just gonna dump all of this amazing information on you guys right now. I will say one of the most important pieces of media that I watched that helped me in researching for this podcast was the documentary called All I Can Say, which was a documentary that filmmakers did in 2019, where they literally took every single bit of footage that Shannon himself recorded from 1990 until his death in 1995. So he recorded almost every single day on his little handheld camcorder, just recording what he could so he could look back and remember what he felt during specific times in not only his life, but in the life of the band and in history in itself, because there's actually quite a lot of things that went on between 90 and 95 that he recorded that I think is really interesting to look at historically speaking. But he mostly talked about a lot of his thoughts and feelings about what went on in the band, what happened with him and his life in the past, what he went through leading up to his death. And he actually recorded himself the day of his death, October the 21st, 1995. Spoiler alert. But that's the day that he passes away on tour. And I think it's incredibly interesting that he was recording himself back all of this time and he was vlogging of sorts. And I thought that's really interesting. So Shannon, he was born September 26, 1967 in Lafayette, Indiana. From what I remember Shannon saying of Lafayette, it was kind of like a small town community where everyone knew everyone's business. You know, no one's secrets could be their own. Everyone knew everything. There were a lot of Amish communities in Lafayette. There were a lot of factories. There were a lot of farms. And so he grew up living this life and he loved jam bands. You know, he loved music. He loved Bob Dylan, the Beatles, Neil Young. He was a massive 1970s music fan, of course, because he was born on the cusp of the 70s there in 67. So, of course, that's what he grew up with. That makes sense. He also was a pretty avid sports player in high school, and he said that it wasn't until after he graduated high school that he thought about singing in a more serious manner, only because, you know, he was working factory jobs in Lafayette and he wanted something more for himself. He wanted to get out of Indiana because Indiana wasn't providing him the life that he wanted. He said that he was getting into too much trouble and that he was being self-destructive to the point where his parents saw this change in Shannon. They saw that he was taking a liking to alcohol, which came from his dad. His dad was, I don't know if I would necessarily dub him as an alcoholic or if Shannon would, but, you know, his father liked the bottle and so did Shannon. And so Shannon expressed how his father being, you know, very addicted to alcohol was in a way, if you will, bestowed upon himself. And so he also took on these addictions as well, which kind of leads into why he ends up passing away when he does in 1995. Unfortunately, he was only 28 when he passed away. But, you know, Shannon was living kind of a normal, rudimentary, everyday life that most kids back then would probably live. You know, he graduated high school. He was high school sweethearts with a woman named Lisa that he was very close with and would be in a relationship with up until his death. So he was living the kind of everyday normal life. But when he turned 18, he wanted to leave not only his turbulent household, in which both of his parents divorced when he was 16, 17, which left him very impressionable, but also the small town of Indiana, because he was watching things like MTV and he was watching his favorite bands and musicians on TV performing. And he thought it was so interesting because he said that watching MTV and watching TV in general was like his one view into the outside world, because he only had the lens of small farm town community, Lafayette. And he was not looking to live this life anymore. He wanted something that was greater than himself. And this is where he started learning about music and wanting to sing and practice music. I gotta say, Shannon Hoon's probably one of the most underrated singers because he's incredibly talented. I'm just gonna say it just from my own perspective. When you hear him sing, especially live, he's so good. He could actually kind of be on par in the gritty kind of nature that Axl Rose kind of has, in a way, that kind of like high-pitched, kind of almost raspy nasal quality. Shannon Hoon has that same thing, and it's really, really cool. So Shannon ends up leaving Lafayette, Indiana, and he ends up moving to Los Angeles, where he thinks, you know, LA is the place where you go to make dreams come true. And so when he was there for the first month without having met anybody, until it was at this point where he was at a party and he meets musicians Brad Smith and Rogers Stevens. And this is where eventually they would start to form Blind Melon. And then they would meet Christopher Thorne and Glenn Graham. And then in 1990, Blind Melon was born. But another interesting, very important person that Shannon meets on his first few months there when he was in Los Angeles and Blind Melon had not even really been born yet necessarily. He wasn't really doing anything with his music. He had been in a band previously in Lafayette, and he had only one song really that he did himself called Change, which would be on Blind Melon's debut album. So he had that under his belt, but he knew what he was doing musically. But he ends up being friends with Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses. And of course, I think everyone knows of Axl Rose. Everyone knows of Guns N' Roses. And at this time, Guns N' Roses had just come out with their first album, Appetite for Destruction, which is, I think, still to this day, one of the most very, very impressive rock albums of all time. So for him to befriend Axl Rose, that's really impressive. And so I thought, how could he have met Axl Rose? Like, how could an unknown person like him meet someone famous like Axl? Well, it turns out that Axl Rose actually was from Lafayette, Indiana, and Axl was friends with Shannon's sister back in high school. So what ends up happening is Shannon's sister calls Axl and says, hey, my brother's coming out to Los Angeles. Can you look out for him and make sure everything is good with him? He wants to pursue music. Maybe if you want, you can show him around the recording studio and show him what it's like to be in a recording studio and do professional, you know, music and things like that. So this is what ends up happening. And again, Shannon's recording all of this on his little camcorder, and he records going into the studio with Axl Rose, which is really cool. What I actually didn't know, he was so ingrained with Guns N' Roses, Shannon was, that while Guns N' Roses were recording their Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 albums, Shannon had the chance to sing backing vocals on a lot of their songs on those albums, specifically Live and Let Die, November Rain, You Ain't the First, The Garden, and an alternate version of Don't Cry, where the two were harmonizing together. And I just thought, oh my God, that's so interesting how literally an unknown person like Shannon ends up being swept under the wing of Guns N' Roses And then he ends up singing on the album, and he goes as far as being featured in the music video for Don't Cry. To the point where Don't Cry becomes one of the most popular music videos played on MTV's daily rotation. So fans are like, who is this person singing with Guns N' Roses? Like, is he a new member of Guns N' Roses? Like, who is this person? So Shannon was making a name for himself even before he came up with Blind Melon, which is really interesting. And to this day, people still consider Shannon Hoon to be like the unofficial member of Guns N' Roses, because Shannon just kind of came in there at such a poignant time for the band. So I just thought, you know what? That was really cool. I kind of like that little fact there. But so in 1990, Blind Melon was formed. And the band was probably named Blind Melon after a term that one of the band members' fathers used to describe the neighborhood stoners. So Blind Melons. Interesting. So at this point in the game, Blind Melon is still friends with Guns N' Roses. They will always be friends with Guns N' Roses. And they're off doing their own music. Now they're off trying to perform and do little gigs here and there. They don't have a lot of songs. They have at this point about 4 or 5 songs. But it gets them through a recording contract with Capitol Records. Like, they were just that good that in 1991 they were signed $500,000. On this recording contract with Capitol. And Capitol is one of the major record labels in the music industry. So for them to get on Capitol for their debut is massive, and only with a 4-song demo. I think that's incredibly ostentatious of them to do, and that's incredible. It's really cool because Shannon also records this moment, and like, they're all up on the roof of Capitol Records and they're like popping champagne. And they're drinking and having fun, and it's raining, and they're signing the contract in the rain. And I thought, oh man, that's such a like a cool, poignant moment. Like, that's really awesome that that happens for them. Actually, it was around this time as well that as they were signed to Capitol Records, they were asked to be the opening band on a Soundgarden tour and a Guns N' Roses tour. This was before any debut album or single had ever dropped from the band. So they were already making waves in the music industry before any official song or album was coming out. But they do go on to kind of make their debut album. They work with a producer, Rick Parashar, who is known for producing Pearl Jam's 10 album. And they actually record at London Bridge Studios in Seattle. And London Bridge Studios is one of the most poignant recording studios at the centerfold of the grunge movement, because bands like Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, I'm pretty sure Nirvana recorded there as well. All of them recorded at London Bridge Studios. And the fact that Blind Melon is now coming in to record there, I think that's extremely impressive as well. So they were just, you know, trying their best to get an album going. And what's also really cool, yet again, Shannon is filming every single day about all these things that's going on within the band and within himself. And there's actually a moment where he's recorded singing No Rain. And I thought, that's so interesting. And it gave me chills just to see him recording this song for the first time. It really blows my mind. I mean, it might be such a simple thing, but it truly, truly blows my mind. I suppose what bonded everyone together in the band was the fact that each of them came from what Shannon called repressed environments, or what would most likely be called like small town communities, where, you know, they had wild ambitions that were well beyond the boundaries and the scope of their small town community. So LA, I think, was one of the perfect places for them to all bond and find each other. So the debut album, which is self-titled, called Blind Melon, was released on September 1992 and initially sold poorly until the single No Rain became an MTV staple by July the following year in 93. And of course, like I said before, the music video for No Rain helped to kind of propel the band even further in popularity and give them international recognition, to the point where when they started to tour the album in 1992, they went on an international tour, which is huge. The album eventually gained quadruple platinum status, and it debuted at the Billboard Top 40 on October 9th, 1993, And I believe it landed at number 7 by that year 93, which is very, again, very ostentatious for a band's debut album. It didn't reach number 1, but at the top 10, that's extremely well done. So that's awesome. The thing, though, that started kind of happening around this time that Blind Melon was becoming popular and in the eyes of everybody was Shannon Hoon's increase with drugs and alcohol. So the two kind of went hand in hand with each other. And people in the band and around Shannon started calling him like Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because when Shannon would drink, his anger would come out. Now, I think maybe it could be said that he had a bit of repressed anger that he didn't maybe possibly deal with. I'm not sure. I'm just speculating. But just because, you know, of his past, of his youth growing up with, you know, his parents divorcing at 16, 17, when he said himself that he was at that stage where he was discovering who he was, trying to figure out the kind of person he wanted to be. And then his parents get divorced. So it kind of threw a monkey wrench in all of his plans when he was young at that time. Not only that, but he also has a predisposition to drinking because of his father's habit. Actually, what's so weird was on this All I Can Say documentary, Shannon ends up recording a phone call he has with his dad, who's in jail, and he got arrested for drinking under the influence. And I guess his father's license was suspended for 10 years because of his DUI. But like Shannon was kind of like laughing, you know what I'm saying? Like making a joke at it, like, oh, well, you know, maybe you can drive a go-kart around. Like, what do you think about that, Dad? And like all that stuff, like, you know, kind of trying to make light of the situation, which is maybe his coping mechanism for it. But Shannon clearly had an issue with alcohol, and he was aware of this too. It's so sad because he had at one point, as he claimed, a 10 months sobriety. But then it came to a point down the road, you know, between the mid 90s here where he broke his streak. So he was starting to kind of go under again. And a lot can be speculated as to like why this all started. You know, he also started getting in trouble with the law again, because there were some instances where he got arrested for like indecent exposure on stage. And he apparently famously like urinated on stage during a Vancouver show where they opened for Lenny Kravitz. So there was that instance. There were some instances where he would start fights with people, you know, disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. So he had kind of a lengthy rap sheet just because he was under the influence sometimes. And, you know, when he was drinking, he said that, you know, the rage would just come out of him. So sometimes he got very influenced by the things around him that he couldn't control, that he was getting upset by. You know, because there were some instances that Shannon took note of that started happening around this time that I think added to his worsening decline in mental health, even though this band had a massively popular debut album and an incredibly even more so popular single, No Rain, that is still popular today. It's really funny also on that documentary, Shannon is recorded on the radio and him and the DJ are talking about like how, you know, oh, maybe in 2010, like people will be listening to this song. And like Shannon starts laughing at that possibility. Like, oh yeah, people in 2010 listening to No Rain, or haha, that's interesting. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just over here like, yeah, it's 2023 and I'm listening to No Rain. So I think it's really interesting, that whole thing there. Like maybe they didn't think they'd get as popular as they would. Or not only that, but I think Shannon also maybe wasn't handling success all that well, because, you know, when you're young and you see your famous heroes on TV or something making it big and making a lot of money, you think that looks fun, right? And Shannon notoriously has said this over and over on video of him recording himself saying this and on interviews, that he thought the problems, like the mental problems and the other kind of personal problems that he had within his family dynamic and within himself, would get better when he got famous. But actually, he found out that when he got famous, when he got the money and the recognition that he always wanted, it actually made it worse and it didn't help him. So therefore, he then became dependent on substance abuse, drug use and alcohol, to the point where actually Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, who at this time in the 90s, after Kurt Cobain's passing, he got out of rehab and he was trying to phone Shannon and get him some help. Mike McCready is a really cool person because he not only did that with Shannon, but he did that with Lane Staley from Alice in Chains because Lane also had a massive drug problem at the time. But this was all captured on video as Shannon's playing like the recordings, the voicemails left on his answering machine and things like that, which kind of adds a lot more context to this whole story and paints an interesting picture of a man that's going through a lot of things, you know, and not only that, dealing with the fame, but also the fact that him and his girlfriend, Lisa, they had a daughter, Nico Blue, which is a beautiful name. And, you know, he was struggling with the notion of, right, I now have a family to support and take care of. And while music doesn't fulfill me like this anymore, I have to keep doing this to support my growing family. And that's hard when you're put in that situation. You know, I think at one point he loved music, but then when he realized that his problems wouldn't be solved by fame and by money and recognition, that it really took a toll on him. But there were two instances predominantly worth noting that changed Shannon's perspective 1,000%. The first one was after a show sometime here in the mid-90s. Shannon was walking around with his camera like he always does, and he recorded the aftermath of a very serious incident where apparently this girl, you know, random to the whole Blind Melon story, but it just so happened to happen at the same time here. A girl had leaped from the 20th floor of her apartment and killed herself, and Shannon was so visibly shaken by this event because he wasn't obviously expecting something like this to happen right after one of his shows. Again, it does not correlate to the Blind Melon story, but it's an event that happened congruently, if that makes sense. So Shannon said that it was his hardest moment to deal with, and also he said that he won't ever forget that. And then the second moment that really impacted him strongly was the death of Kurt Cobain, which happened in April of 1994. And, you know, it makes sense because when the news of Kurt Cobain's death broke, everyone was like shocked because Nirvana was really that band that proved to people that you can be just like everyone else, but you can make music that touches people. You know, people that are going through hard times, bands like Nirvana, they really help to make music for those kinds of people that were struggling and make them feel not so alone. So when I think Kurt Cobain ended up dying, I think that really impacted him to the point where he said, literally verbatim, that the death of Kurt Cobain made him start thinking about all of his problems that he had swept under the rug and that he let fester and that he let grow and that he never really took the opportunity to like deal with his issues. Instead, he would just carpet sweep, deal with it later or never. And then he would drink and use drugs to forget his problems. You know, the typical coping mechanism for dealing with your problems is just not dealing with your problems, right? But the death of Kurt Cobain kind of, for some reason, blew all of his problems back in his face. And this is where he realized he wasn't happy with where he was mentally and also in his career and in so many aspects. He said that he had a bit of a crisis for 2 days after Kurt's death, just thinking about everything. So a lot's happening with Shannon, you know, the arrests that he has, the drinking and the drugs, and his family's concerned, his friends are concerned, you know, even though, you know, again, they had a great debut album, an amazing single, No Rain. They made an appearance at Woodstock 94, where they played alongside such people as like Aerosmith and Metallica and Nine Inch Nails. You know, all these other amazing bands that are on there. Joe Cocker, you know, was another one that was on the bill with them that Saturday at Woodstock 94. And they had another album that they did called Soup. However, that one didn't do anything on the charts. It didn't do anything significantly. And it actually was kind of considered like a flop, if you will. There were no singles that made it big on the album. Nothing really that happened there. So that also contributed, I believe, as well to the fact that like Shannon was trying to make music to support his family, but yet this album flopped. I think what helped to make this album flop in a way was that they moved on from their alternative, perhaps maybe a little folky type of album that they did in the beginning. They changed it for Soup to be more of like a New Orleans style jazz mishmash of alternative rock with instrumentation of like horns, mandolin, banjo, because they were recording in New Orleans, Louisiana for this album in 1994. And so they were inspired by what they were hearing around them all the time, which is that jazz style that New Orleans is most known for. But it just didn't really work. You know, considering in 94, they were still doing alternative music and grunge music. So it just didn't like make a whole lot of sense, you know? So the album kind of failed massively. And unfortunately, they were touring, or they wanted to tour for the Soup album. But, you know, it was hard because Shannon had done rehab and he was clean for a bit, but he wanted his drug counselor to accompany him on the road so he could be in check. But his drug counselor was like, Shannon, you shouldn't go on tour right now. Like, you shouldn't go. So unfortunately, his counselor was dismissed while he was on tour for Soup. And this is where he would end up passing away, is on tour, like I mentioned at the beginning of this. Unfortunately, you know, you don't make rational decisions when you're in that kind of mind state, you know, that makes sense. So, and of course, what ends up happening is Shannon gets drugs, you know, somehow he ends up finding a contact to get drugs and he gets it. You know, if you want it, you'll get it, right? So apparently there was a very disappointing performance that ended up happening at the Numbers Club in Houston, Texas on October the 20th. And Shannon sunk very deep into an all-night drug binge after this disappointing performance. What made it disappointing? I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure that maybe people could see that the music just wasn't the same anymore and, you know, they just weren't feeling it, maybe from both sides of the coin, the audience and the band, you know. But Shannon, with everything, I think, crumbling on him, I think he sunk under the weight of the pressure and he just was like, you know what, I'm going on an all-night binge. And he had done binges before in the past. And this is the thing that's so unfortunate, is he had just gotten through rehab, right, prior to going on tour. So your tolerance is already not as it would be if you had not gone to rehab, right? So that was probably his biggest mistake. Maybe he knew that, but maybe he also didn't know that. Maybe he thought if he had used his normal amount of binging paraphernalia that he'd be fine, that he could handle it, but his body clearly could not handle it at all because he ends up dying. So the following day on the 21st, Blind Melon was scheduled to play a show in New Orleans. So the band's sound engineer, Lyle, he went to the tour bus because Shannon was sleeping on the tour bus. You know, Lyle went to check on Shannon just, you know, for a sound check because the band was going to go perform, right? So Lyle tries to wake up Shannon by, you know, trying to rouse him up, and Shannon was not responding at all. So very concerned, Lyle calls an ambulance and an ambulance arrives. And it was here that Shannon was pronounced dead at the scene, and he was 28 years old. And his death was, of course, contributed to a cocaine overdose. Now, like I said, was this an accident where his normal tolerance was not the same as it would have been in the past, and it was simply an accident, and he thought he'd be fine? Or, you know, did he know that, and did he want to kind of end it? I'm not sure. My gut would maybe lean more towards it was just kind of a simple accident, but he did have a lot going on that kind of made him, very emotional, and I think very mentally unstable at this time. And I feel so bad for him because he seemed like a really cool, funny person. Like, I highly recommend you guys watch that documentary, All I Can Say, because it's literally all just footage that he shot himself. So it's a really interesting look through the eyes of the lens of Shannon and his perspective on things and what he thought about life and all these interesting perspectives that he took. So I think it's very fascinating, that documentary. And it's really sad that he ended up passing away because he was only 28 and his daughter was only about, I believe, from my recollection, about 15 months old. So his daughter was very young. I don't know. I think my gut just tells me that it was an accident. I think he thought he could take his normal dosage and he'd be fine. You know, that's the mistake, unfortunately, is when you're clean and you get out of rehab, you think, oh, well, I just want to take my normal dose because I'm fine with that dose. My body can handle it. But your tolerance is shot back down to practically nothing. So he really overdid it by accident. I think that's kind of what I'm piecing together here, but that's just my own personal opinion. So Shannon was buried at the Dayton Cemetery in Dayton, Indiana. His grave is inscribed with a line from Blind Melon's song Change, which is the first song that he ends up writing ever. So what's written on his grave is the lyric, "I know we can't all stay here forever, so I want to write my words on the face of today and they'll paint it." So 1 year after the death of Shannon, the remaining Blind Melon members release an outtakes and demos album called Nico, which is, you know, named after Shannon's daughter, which is very nice. Profits for the album, sales from the album, went to a program that helps musicians with drug and alcohol addiction, which I thought was cool. And also during this time, the band tried to replace Shannon with another singer in the group, but they were sorely mistaken and realized, oh yeah, we can't really replace Shannon because Blind Melon really was Shannon's voice, 1000%. And you can't find a singer like Shannon who really easily like that. Like, I really suggest that you listen to Blind Melon live because it really shows how interesting of a voice that Shannon had. So unfortunately, in March of 1999, Blind Melon disbanded for good. And that, in a nutshell, is the story of Blind Melon, their rise to fame, their friendship with Guns N' Roses, and the life and death of singer Shannon Hoon. So go listen to Blind Melon today if you haven't heard of Blind Melon's music before, because you will not regret it. I promise you that. So thank you very much for listening. Again, thank you to Derek at Correct Prism Studios for making the intro. You're amazing. I hope that everyone here listening has a wonderful day. And if you'd like, you can follow me on Instagram at On The Mix Podcast, where I'll be posting all of my updates on the podcast. So if you'd like to get updates about it, definitely follow me on there or just for fun. But thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and I'll see you guys next Wednesday on another episode of On The Mix. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.